The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Diane Mansfield, Global Director of MIBI and Data at ConvaTec. It's wonderful having you on the show, and you know, it's always actually quite difficult having people such as yourself on the show because there's so much that I kind of want to go at, and finding somewhere to start tends to be, I suppose, the challenging part of it all. But I think I'm not going to try anything crazy today. I think we'll just start kind of at the beginning, and you know, you've had a long successful career in technology, and I think the way that people are starting now and getting involved in technology, and even the way I suppose now, like someone like yourself is probably relatively involved in the hiring process now and what you're looking for like young technologists, has probably changed quite significantly. It's something I've kind of spent a lot of time thinking about, I suppose, in recent years, because I have various thoughts on, I suppose, traditional education, especially with regards to, technology. But for you, do you think that it has changed quite significantly since, without the obvious, technical changes, do you think that the kind of the paths to get into technology have, changed quite significantly better potentially?
Absolutely, definitely they have changed. When I'm actually recruiting for people, then I look for people who have got a passion for their subject area. Mm. At one time, it had to be that you had to have the piece of paper that said you'd done the course. Mm. I think because of the way that technology is so intuitive now and so interactive, as well as the innovation that's associated to many of the technologies out there, that you want people with good basic common sense, but with a passion and a hunger to achieve the best that they can with the technologies. I think from a machine learning perspective, yes, they're very smart people with the different patterns of the data that they find and use. But at the same time, you can't just be a geek down that route. You have to have the business value in there, which I bring down to being the pragmatic side of that person's personality and the way that they apply themselves.
Yeah. I don't know if the stereotype kind of falls into that, but I think there's an element of someone who has to be motivated, and I think it's disassociated at times with the kind of geek, right, or whatever, the stereotype is of people who are interested in technology. But I think the worst and probably the harshest one is the disassociation with how motivated you have to be, and ambitious, I suppose. That's something that is a disconnect, and something that, quite simply you can't get away with anymore, is not being that way inclined.
That's where I come back to the passion. I think if you are talking to somebody and you can see their body language as well as the words that they're using as to the motivation, the passion, going that extra mile. I think if people utilizing today's technologies have got all those, then it shows through in the way that they present themselves and the way that they are presenting their experience on how they've used it, how they have personally used self-development to learn more about the technologies, to be able to use and optimize them as much as possible. I think if you get somebody who is perhaps not so motivated on a certain technology, then they tend not to want to pursue that too far. Mm-hmm. But with the different technologies that are there today, then it's not the old-fashioned where you had to take a course to get a certification just to get on and have a password. It's so different now in the aptitude and the way that we use the technologies. So it's much easier for people when they do have a passion and their motivation to be able to pursue their dreams and take it as far as they want to.
And that passion as well, I think can be, in my opinion, can be misleading in a sense that, you know, you have to be fully engaged in the project and use the technology as an enabler to achieve whatever the X goal is, right, for your own organization or the organization itself. It really is, you have to see it as that kind of enabler and how you can leverage it. I think what can be a disillusion is that people assume that you're passionate about technology means that you're going to be able to execute. But actually, I think it can be kind of counterproductive in a way, because you're motivated by the technology itself as opposed to how it can enable you to achieve the kind of higher level goals.
I think that then comes to the leadership in how you actually the difference between leadership and management. It's on how you grow people to be able to get the best out of them. Hopefully then the leadership have the bigger picture and they will relate this to the person who has that passion to give it the direction that's needed to make it the enabler, rather than just allow somebody to go down a track that maybe from a technical perspective is something that they personally want to do but doesn't necessarily fit into the bigger picture. So I think this then is down to the leadership of certain people as well within the teams to be able to motivate them and optimize their enthusiasm as much as possible.
I tend to think though as well, I think people do get a lot of negativity and assumptiveness that because you've been trained as a technologist, you don't have those kind of natural commercial instincts. Well, I think on the other end of that, I think it builds good habits because you know, you think about technology and the essence of it, right? What it allows us to do is to work at scale, you know, predominantly, right? That's what what technology enables us to do. And essentially business is all about that, right? It's leverage and scale. So I think if you can, you already have those kind of principles embedded if you're interested in technology. It's just understanding the similarities between the scalability to do, you know, something, you know, with your data, for instance, and how that might affect, you know, the commercial aspect of the business is a similar train of thought. I think maybe it tends to just need, like you were saying, a good manager or a good leader to kind of unlock that in a technologist's head and actually see the parallels there.
I think also technologies are becoming much more integrated. They're not standalone. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the impact it has on the business, then it's a lot more apparent, a lot more visible to people. So the commercial aspect of what they're doing is very, the impact is seen much easier than it was before and a lot quicker. So in terms of the technologists, I think they have a greater opportunity to see the commercial and understand the commercial aspects mm-hmm. of what they're doing rather than it was in the past.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you're speaking about, you know, the maybe agile and the different methodologies that have been kind of popular.
Methodologies as well as some of the technologies themselves. I mean, there's some very smart technologies on the market at the moment. We're very lucky in where we are from an overall landscape in the, being able to cherry pick on some of the technologies that we can use within our environment. And I think some of them now, because they are so integrated as different modules within certain technologies rather than being complete different silos of technologies, then it does allow the commercial impact to become more visible. And even some of the technology people then are able to appreciate what it is that they're doing from a commercial perspective and see the bigger picture a lot quicker than perhaps when technologies were a lot more siloed rather than the integration that's there today.
And to that point as well, can you recall a time where you felt that kind of change, where you didn't feel like the back office anymore? You know, you very much felt like a much more of a profit center. And was that, you know, because I suppose it's not always been that way. But
no.
So do you recall that kind of point of inflection, I suppose, where you started to feel that kind of pull towards a profit center? And can you talk about the sense of fulfillment maybe that brought, if at all?
Definitely. It was, I'd say, a good 20 years ago when this happened in my career, when some of the larger applications then started acquiring some of the smaller applications. applications, the standalone ones, and then they became an integrated package of what was being offered. And you could see then from the landscape that this was a trend that was going to happen going forward. And I think with some of them, the open source applications that are available, rather than the very large global companies that are out there at the moment, you could see they were going to be challenged, and therefore they had to change the ways that they were offering their technologies for customer satisfaction. When you saw some of the open source and the capability that was there and available, as well as the return on investment for large organizations, then the bigger applications had to challenge themselves. And I know that a couple of them took a step backwards and effectively weren't quite as visible in the market, but then came back and they had streamlined what they were doing much more to make themselves a lot more cost effective and efficient, both from a commercial but also a technical fulfillment perspective as well.
Interesting. You know, did you get the you know, internally when this kind of change was starting to happen? Because I suppose, you know, the internal transformation side of it, as much as anything, you know, I've had small experiences with this, but, you know, the kind of the pushback comes and you have to really win it over culturally first before, you know, just kind of saying, we're going to throw a load of money at tech, here it comes, you know, we'll just kind of fit it in, right? It doesn't seem to work like that.
No, definitely not. You won't get your user adoption if you just go down the techie route. Similar with the machine learning that are out there at the moment, some of the patterns that are available are very interesting, but if it doesn't bring the business value, then, you know, there's no point in actually doing it. And that then applies to all the different applications that are out there at the moment. It has to bring the business value, because the business do have choices, and therefore you need to make sure that you do have the one that fits culturally within your business, but equally then satisfies the different measures that have been placed on the company to bring the return on investment and total cost of ownership optimized as soon as possible.
Interesting. And, you know, it's so consistent, actually, because I've had a few CDOs, which actually it'd be interesting to kind of get your thoughts on that anyway, is about having, like, you know, C-level data representatives in a company. I think in large part, most people are typically positive, but I'll get your thoughts on that in a second. Just make this point on, you know, how when we were kind of, when I was interviewing them, you know, the main consistency that I drew from it with regards to their challenges that they're facing at the C-level is, you know, is that the assumptions of the value that they're going to bring were completely misplaced. And the greater challenge was the change project towards the cultural aspect of where they were going into businesses, right, or starting off. I think obviously a startup's aside, because obviously they have, you know, the value that they can have is that they can just run things that way from the beginning. But, you know, traditional companies don't have that value, and that's what typically all of the CDOs spoke about as their kind of greatest challenge, was building it into the cultural aspects of a business through every department, you know, and that's the kind of the importance and the value of data, but also the challenges with, you know, actually trying to integrate that into an organization, which I think is obviously why, from my perspective, the C-level data officers is extremely valuable and a necessary position, because I think you can only, in my opinion, you can only really truly adopt it from the top down. So if you don't have that footprint, I think it is going to be more difficult to make a change.
I do think you need that top-down approach. People do look for the leadership from the very top. And there is just so much data in the larger companies now that we're almost drowning in it. And it's a case of actually prioritizing, well, how much data do we really need to use to run the business? And I'm not talking about today. This has been going on for several years now. we just have too much data. And there used to be the culture of give me everything and I'll work out what I need. Whereas now it's a case of, well, what are you trying to do from a process perspective? And we'll make sure that we provide you the right data to support that business process. So it's not completely making data redundant. We're not doing it for the sake of it, but it's just prioritizing the focus as to what data is needed to support the business process. And that in itself can bring about change management in the way that people view data. It's the old cliche, isn't it? The data-driven organization with self-service, but you have to know what data you need to run your business and make it available to the right people to be able to run the business. And I think if people can see they have support from the top to achieve that, then people are more likely to support the transformation that's needed to get there, rather than the old way of challenging everything and just give me everything and I'll work it out for myself. We don't need to do that these days.
Do you think that there's also an element still that there's kind of misplaced expectations on data teams? Do you still feel that?
I think until people see for themselves how it is actually working, you can give people a roadmap, of course, and they look at it with skepticism. But once they are actually part of the journey and they see the benefits, the tangible benefits that are in front of them, and they can see the efficiency that it brings to their working day and how they're doing their job, then that supports the user adoption and the engagement that you have with them. So I think engagement is a big part of this, to help people understand what it is that collectively you're trying to achieve together. It's not the old-fashioned way of saying you will. It has to be much more of a collaborative engagement. But then I think once you've got that level of engagement, then the people do work together much more efficiently and positively to get a better result in the end.
Has it taught you a lot about the kind of people side of it and managed stakeholder management, for instance? You know, do you think that someone in your position is almost becoming, or is kind of a key part of the role? And how have you kind of looked to develop that skill set?
I think it is a key part of the role, because we have different areas of business, even in the larger global corporations. We have the cultural differences as well as language differences. And you need to be able to speak to all different types of people to relate to their roles. And I think you need to have that soft skill to be able to pursue, be successful with the role to take the program forward. So I think if people can see that there is leadership from the top and people are trying to make the effort to take the program forward, then people will definitely be a lot more positive to any change that may be as part of the roadmap as it goes down the journey.
Definitely. You know, fulfillment is something that kind of I've talked about recently, and it's always been kind of interesting in context with people who progress through their careers from, you know, very hands-on, you know, banging out code, to all of a sudden being in kind of a leadership or management position, where those kind of that sense of fulfillment and sense of achievement, it comes from a completely different place. You know, you don't get that kind of instant gratification quite the same way that you would if you were as hands-on. So I wanted to kind of ask you the question as well, actually, about that. You know, have there kind of been different times where you question that? Because I think the sense of fulfillment and achievement, it needs to be there, but sometimes it's not always as obvious as to where it comes from. I've certainly experienced that in my career, and it's taken the time to adjust. And, you know, it's obviously kind of, a selfish pursuit in some ways, but it's also a necessary one, in my opinion, that you need to understand when you should feel good. And how, you know, with regard to achievements, and it's not, and it's strange to say that it's not always quite as obvious, certainly when you go into kind of a leadership or management position. So I just wanted to ask you now, you know, whether you did have those kind of experiences, and, you know, where you're up to now with how you kind of get those, the trigger those endorphins, should I say?
I call it my light bulb moment. When you are working with different cultures and people have different ways of working. I've worked in global companies for about 25 years now, so I have worked with a significant different types of cultures of people, but I call it the light bulb moment, when people actually realize that what it is that you're trying to do for them will benefit them. They can see that benefit and they want to embrace that benefit. To me, that is very, very satisfying when you've actually worked and partnered with this person to get them to where they can help themselves. That is the self-gratification, if you like, of the gratification as to helping the other people. I get satisfaction from being able to help people get to that point. I get a lot of fulfillment and pleasure from doing that.
And has that changed over time, do you think?
No, I think people will always be people. Different cultures have their different ways of working. It's being sensitive to those different cultures as well. So it's not about being confrontation. It's much more about being collaborative. But I think as the global companies have become much more visible and transparent internally, and certainly not the three regions as being siloed, then I think that has helped tremendously, because people then feel able to reach out to other people within their global companies a lot easier than perhaps they did 20 years ago.
You know, it's fascinating talking to people like yourself, because I just think that, you know, the level of kind of enthusiasm that you've obviously sustained to have the career that you've had, it to me is incredibly impressive. But, you know, do you feel as though it should be, you know, put it into context, there's a lot of people who, you know, encourage you to read books, and, you know, there's a lot of videos and motivational speakers out there and all this kind of jazz, right? And I've always kind of, I've never really appreciated that kind of stuff personally, because I've always felt as though if you need to kind of turn to something like that, then there's something that's like fundamentally wrong with what you're trying to achieve, right? If you need that much kind of, you know, you need to be fired up that much. I've always felt as though there's something like fundamentally wrong with what you're trying to achieve. You're not all the way there. You're not all the way into it. You know, has it felt, I wouldn't say easy is the right way, but has it been kind of, I'll just say easy because I can't think of another word at the moment. But, you know, has it felt much easier just because it's something that you've probably enjoyed, where it's not felt as though you've needed to kind of get yourself built up into a frenzy to go ahead and kind of execute on things throughout your career?
You have to have a lot of self-confidence to be able to speak to different cultures and work with different cultures, but also the sensitivity to recognize that things are different. Mm-hmm. But that in itself is not a negative as a brick wall. There are many ways around it. You don't have to bang your head against it and say that's the only way to do it. You have to think outside the box. I've worked with some very smart leaders in my past and learned from them in their approach, watch how they deal with their management, and learn from their approach and their style of ways of working. Yes, there are books out there. There are speakers that you can go and listen to. Some of it is very basic common sense, but there again, some of it is very helpful in as much as, oh, if I perhaps just change a little bit in my approach in the way that I talk to people, then that will perhaps better a situation rather than making it any confrontational. Mm-hmm. So it taught me to be much more collaborative, but to be positive and succeed, have that confidence to be able to keep going forward all the time. I think networking is important because you learn from other people's experiences, and no two people are going to have absolute mirror image experiences of how they've got for where they are with their careers. So it's always good to learn and bounce ideas off with other people. But I think it's also good for you to keep in touch with other people so that you can understand yourself more, look in the mirror and say, if somebody was approaching me like this, how would I react? It never does any harm to look back in towards ourselves and see how we are potentially being perceived and how we would like to be perceived to be successful, to go forward.
Awesome. I think that's very well articulated. Tremendous. And are you in kind of that position now? You know, you mentioned networking, and you know, I agree, it's incredibly important, especially just to have from a perspective point of view. You know, you don't have to be at a company long to kind of be caught up in a bubble, I suppose. But do you tend to be one of those people now that you get reached out to a lot, and people ask for your kind of advice on things, maybe from junior people? And if so, what are some of the kind of the common questions and subsequently responses that you tend to find yourselves engaged in?
There are people in my past that, if they have progressed their career, have reached out to me and said, can you help me? This is what I would like to do. This is where I would like to go. I'm just not quite sure how I'm going to achieve it. I've always been very supportive to, I won't say mentoring, because that's quite a full-time type of a role to be able to do to somebody. But I've always been approachable as a person to help and support different people with their careers that have been part of my teams as I've gone forward. Always kept a good networking from wherever company I've moved on from. And the majority of questions are based about, well, how can I get them to change? This is what they're doing and they just won't listen. How do I get them to change and do something different? So it's then, you know, well, how are you approaching it? Are you giving them options? It's not dictatorial. People need options to feel that they're engaged, to be able to make their own decisions and take some responsibility and accountability of what they're trying to achieve as it's going forward. Nobody likes the old-fashioned way of being told what to do. There has to be a level of engagement. And once you start breaking it down into those types of components with people as to what it is that they're trying to achieve, either in their current role or if they're looking for different roles, then it changes their approach and how they want to move things forward.
And you know, the old kind of cliche as well, you know, kind of play it safe or go for it. Are you I know it's not always kind of as black and white as that, but if it was to kind of, I suppose, highlight your personality, which direction would you say that you tend to kind of lean towards?
I go for it.
I love it. Diane, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much for your time, Andy. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.